Good evening. In continuing with our series on Hilchos Pesach, I mentioned last week that I'd like to spend some time talking about the halachos of Hechsher Kelim. Hechsher Kelim, commonly known as kashering, is a very interesting sugya. It's a very interesting topic of discussion. And as I was preparing this year, it occurred to me that it's really not going to be possible for us to cover every one of the kitchen appliances that we have in our house. And the theme of this year generally is that we focus very much on the background of all the halachos. And we're going to try to understand the theory and the halachas with pertaining to kashering kelim, and in terms of practical application, how it's relevant to every one of the kitchen appliances that we have, or how it's relevant to all the utensils we have in our kitchen. I may not be able to get to that, and I would refer you to the guide that the Rav put together. This is a complete Pesach guide, which can be obtained on the website, and it goes out with the emails, where every one of, I'm assuming everything you have in your kitchen will be listed there in a very clear discussion on how it can be kosher, it can be found there. But I believe that this year will help us understand how those conclusions have been reached. As with many other topics, or every other topic we've discussed up until now, all of our halacha comes directly from the Torah. It comes from the psukim in the Torah. The psukim in the Torah write very clearly, very succinct. We don't have extra details. Everything is very clearly written. And how those halachas manifest and how those halachas become relevant to us is what we spend so much time on in the Mishnayos, and what we spend so much time on in the Paiskim, the Rishonim, the Achronim, and Shulchan Aruch, and exactly figuring out how it's relevant to us is where our modern-day Paiskim help us understand how to apply that. What we're going to try to focus on today is, where do we learn these halachas from? What are the halachas? What are the parameters? And how does it work? So this discussion starts with a discussion in Parshas Matos, which discusses the Melchemes Midyan, the Melchama, the war the Jews had in Midyan. And afterwards, they had all kinds of kelim, all kinds of vessels and utensils that they seized that they wanted to use, but of course it wasn't kosher, and the pasuk had to tell them how they can kosher those kelim to make them usable. So in Parshas Matos, Bamidbar, Perek Lamed Aleph, the 31st Perek, Psukim Chaf Aleph through Chaf Gimel discuss this, and Pasuk Chaf Gimel it says very clearly, Kol davar asher yavai ba'esh, taviru ba'esh v'taher. All utensils that are used for preparing food, when as they go through fire, imagine a barbecue grill, which is used to grill meat. The halacha is that meat was not kosher, and you would like to kasher those kelim, taviru ba'esh v'tahar, you have to pass them through fire again, and they'll become tahar. Now, I will point out the pasuk's using the lashon of tahar, and that there is a major discussion around why the word tahar is used there. It's beyond the scope of today's shir. But what we have to understand from that pasuk is we're referring to not necessarily the halachas of purity and impurity, ritual impurity. We're focusing on what's kosher and not kosher. The pasuk continues, Ach b'meinidi yischata, which refers to the halachas of tevilas kelim, which again is not the discussion of today's shir. And the pasuk continues, V'chol asher lo yavah be'esh, anything which is used to prepare food, but it does not go directly on top of a fire, taviru b'mayim, you can kasher that by passing it through water. If we were to look at Rashi on this pasuk, Rashi in pasuk Chaf Gimel, he's very clear. Dibur Amaschel, the Rashi which starts with the words Taviru Be'esh. Rashi writes Kederach Tashmishai Ha'agalase. This is a very important concept, and this is how we are going to determine what the proper way to kasher something is. And Rashi says Kederach Tashmishai, the way that something is used, Hagalase, that is the way that a person will do Hagalah, he'll be able to extract or expel the taste which is absorbed into that keli. And Rashi continues, Masha Tashmishai Ayidei Chamin, Yagilenu B'chamin, Masha Tashmishai Ayidei Tzli, Kigoyin Hashfud V'Askala, Yilabnenu Ba'ar. Vessels, or utensils, that are used through regular heat sources, like you have water in there, and you'll cook with water, then how will you kasher that? You'll kasher that with chamin, with hot water. But Rashi writes, something which you use directly over a fire, that you use for grilling or for roasting, those will have to be kashered through the process of yilabnenu ba'or. You have to make it turn white through heat. So that's the general parameter. Now, as we would expect, this halacha is written very clearly in the Mishnayos. There's a Mishnah which appears in Maseches Avodah Zarah. The Gemara can be found in Daf Ayin Hey, Amud Beis, 75b. The Mishnah writes as follows: Halakeach kli tashmish min ovdei kachav. When a person buys utensils from a non-Jew, the Mishnah continues: Eshedarka lahatbil yatbil. We're not going to focus on that line right now, but the Mishnah continues: Lahagil yagil labin ba'ar yil labin ba'ar. This Mishnah writes very clearly what is normally used in a normal cooking process. In order for you to make that kush, you would have to put it through a cooking process. Labin ba'ar, something which is used over the fire, will have to become singed through a fire. And the Mishnah continues, Hashfud va'askala malabnun ba'ar va'asakin safa v'hitair. So, Mishnah gives the same examples as Rashi wrote. If you have kalim which are used directly over a fire, you're going to have to put that through a fire to get the taste out of it. Now let us discuss some of the practical halachas of Hagalah. Hagalah works through a concept called Kibayloi Kach Paltoi. And the Gemara says this very clearly in Avodah Zarah, Daf Ayin Vav. The Gemara goes through this process, and the Gemara writes at the end, Kasavar Kibayloi Kach Paltoi, Ma Boiloi Benitzaitzis, Af Paltoi Benitzaitzis. The Gemara is discussing different vessels and their sizes and how it would practically be possible for one to kasher a very large kalim. And the Gemara comes up with a very big problem, because if you have a small pot, or let's say silverware, you can fill up a pot with water, with boiling hot water, and say, you know what? This pot was used to cook something and it let a taste get absorbed into its walls, and let's say it was used for something which wasn't kosher, or something which was chametz stick the whole year, now you'd like to use it on Pesach. So I could say, you know what? It was used to cook macaroni. So how did the taste get in? It got in through cooking. So I'll boil up some water in a very large pot. I'll take my smaller pot and I'll dunk it into the large pot, and there I will be able to get the taste out of the walls. Now, the problem is, what happens if you have a very large pot and you can't fit the large pot into another pot? And the Gemara is trying to figure out how one would do that. And the Gemara says, hold on a second. Why can't you just fill up the pot with water and let that pot, that water boil in there, and it'll take out the taste? And then the Gemara says that seemingly should work, but the problem is that the sides of the keli, the lip, is not going to have water boiling in it because it just won't sit there. The Gemara ultimately says that you shouldn't worry about it, because the same way the water got there in the first place, and the same way that the pot became chametz stick in the first place, there will be water that will go out at the time of kashering. So if it became chametz stick through water that was splashing out, let it become Pesach stick with water that's splashing out. But this Gemara teaches us a very important understanding of how Hagalah works. And basically it says exactly the way that the pot became either treif, or exactly the way that this pot became chametz stick, that's going to be the exact process that you're going to use to get the taste out. And it's interesting, and the Paiskim discuss exactly how far we take this. Some would actually suggest, I haven't seen this brought lahalacha anywhere, but I've heard, I mean, someone would want to suggest, you know, what happens if someone boils something at a low altitude? Does he have to do Hechsher Kalim in the same place where the water can have the exact same temperature? And the truth is, Rosh Zalman writes very clearly that that's not the case, and it's very clear in the Rosh and Psachim, Parak Beis, Simin Zayin, that one does not have to have exactly the same circumstances for Hagalah, but it would be the same process. And in Shulchan Aruch and Simin, in Arachayim, Simin Tafnut Aleph, Sifhei, the Mechaber writes as follows, and he writes very clearly, Kalim, Shenishtamash Behen Bechamin, Kefi Tashmisha Nechsherin. If you had pots or any vessels that were used for hot food, which is chametz the whole year, exactly the same way they were used during the year to become chametz, that would be the way that you would kasher them. And the Shulchan Aruch continues, im tashmishon bekli rishon, if they are used in a kli rishon means it's the pot which is sitting directly on the fire. So take our case of a macaroni pot. You have a pot which was a kli rishon, has water boiling in it, is the first line of cooking. In other words, you have the water boiling in that pot. And another example that the Shulchan Aruch gives, could go in kaf shemegisin by bakdera, or let's say you have a metal spoon that you use to mix your macaroni in the pot. So you stuck a metal spoon directly into a pot with boiling hot water and macaroni. If you would like to kasher that spoon to use it on Pesach, tzarach lachshiner b'klirishin, you're going to have to go ahead and do the hechsher, the kashering in a klirishin. That means you'll have to fill up a boiling hot pot of water, and you're going to have to dunk your spoon into that pot. Vim tashmishan b'klisheni, say this is a vessel which has only been used in a klisheni. In other words, you never ever inserted this spoon directly into a pot that's filled with water. Rather, you use this to mix a tradition soup. You take a pot of boiling hot water, or a kettle, or an urn, and you'll fill up one of these instant soups. Now that's chametz, it's real chametz because it has macaroni in it. Now how do you mix it? You take a spoon out of your drawer and you'll mix it. Now the water in this second vessel, which was never on the fire, is not going to have the same intensity of heat as the original one. So how would I kasher that spoon? I only have to dunk it into a kli sheni. And Shulchan Aruch continues, V'keli shemishtamshim by be'iroi, shema'ara mikli rishon, lo'isagili ba'achshar dikli sheni, lo'atzarach la'ara yisalav mikli rishon, something which is used where you poured boiling hot water on it. So then the process to kasher it would be by pouring boiling hot water on it. So say you have a strainer. You take your pot of macaroni and you pour that water directly into a strainer. So now that strainer gets a direct pour from the kli rishon, from the first keli which was sitting on the fire. You pour water directly from that pot into the strainer. So now in order for you to kasher that strainer, how would you do that? You would have to pour boiling hot water from a kettle onto that strainer. So basically, the halachas of kibbalai, the way it absorbed kach palte, that's the way it's going to expel, are actually taken very literally, and exactly the way something became chametz, that's exactly the process that you're going to have to use to get the chametz out of that particular keli. Now, in terms of what we mentioned earlier with regard to very large pots that have a lip on the outside, so the process can be a bit complicated. I don't want to go through it right now because it really gets a bit complicated. But just very quickly, the Ramban, Simen Taf Nun Aleph and Sif Vav, he writes, V'kairos gedolish le'yuchel la'achnes toich kli rishon, a very large pot that you cannot stick, you can't fit it, you can't submerge it into another pot. What does he say to do? Yiten aleim evan meluban, v'ya'ara aleim roischem il kli rishon ve'vik kli rishon v'chein kol ki yitzu bezeh. Anything similar to that, v'yavir, evan al kol ha'kelish az magilikule. So he gives an idea, you take a very hot stone, which serves as a fire, and you could use that stone to take the water that's already on it to do a kashering process. Now, I don't want to get into this in too much detail. If it's relevant to somebody, you're welcome to reach out. We can discuss exactly how to do it. That basically sets up the parameters for Hagala. Now, the exact process of Hagala is very interesting because one has to ask himself a very simple question. Say I were to have something which is chametz, and I would like to get the chametz out of it. So what I do is I fill up a very large pot of boiling hot water, and I stick my chametz stick. Let's just give an example of a spoon. Say it's 9 o'clock in the morning, and I was making pasta, so I filled up a pot with boiling hot water, and I'm mixing it with a metal spoon. And I realize now my spoon is chametz stick, but I wanted to use the spoon on Pesach. So I fill up another hot pot of water, boiling hot pot of water, and I stick my spoon in there to kasher it. So now what happens? What happens is, my spoon takes the bliyos, the absorbed taste of the chametz, it expels it in to a pot of boiling hot water, but the spoon is still in there. So what stops the chametz from coming right back into the spoon? We have to ask, how does this whole hagala process work? How is this going to work to take chametz out of a spoon and prevent it from coming it back in? And the truth is, this is a kasha that the Rashba asks. The Rashba in the Sefer called Teres Habayis, he asks the question, and he wants to know, how does it know? It seems like there's some kind of process how the water knows to only take out the taste of the spoon, but not to put it back in. And how does that work? And the truth is, many Paiskim dealt with this question, and they wanted to know just how does this work. Many suggestions have been given, and ultimately from here is born a lot of the different minhagim. Some of them are going to be chumras, the extra stringencies, and some of them are going to be me'ikar adin. But ultimately, what comes out from here is, without getting into all the details in the background, there are basically three approaches how to deal with this. Number one, one approach is that if you'll have 60 times the amount of water inside this pot than the size of the spoon, what will happen is, as soon as the taste that's absorbed in the spoon is expelled from the spoon into the water, what happens is that taste becomes batal. We're not learning the halachas of bittul right now, but there's a concept that when you have something which is so small, so minute in a mixture, we don't pay attention to it anymore. So before Pesach, the halacha is that if I have chametz which is mixed in less than 60, so it becomes batal, and we don't pay attention to it. So the lumdus, the understanding that we have over here is that I take my spoon, I stick it into a pot, all the chametz comes out of the spoon, it goes into the water, and indeed does mix into the water, but since I have 60 times the amount of water than the size of the spoon, the taste gets entirely absorbed into the water, it becomes batal, and it can't go back into the spoon, because whatever goes back into the spoon is challenged by at least 60 times of water, which is not chametz. Another approach that's used over here is that a person should always make sure not to kasher something that has been used within the last 24 hours. And what does that do? There's a concept in the halachas of Isser V'Heter with regard to the taste which is absorbed into something, which is called Nosein Tam Lufgam. At a certain point in time, when you have a taste which is stored someplace, the taste goes sour. The general concept is that after 24 hours, if there is taste which is absorbed into anything, what happens is the taste starts to go sour. So if I have my spoon, which absorbs the taste of macaroni, so after 24 hours, I say that the taste of macaroni starts to get weak, and therefore I can no longer expel a high quality taste of macaroni. So what happens is, my spoon is definitely still chametz. I can't use it on Pesach. Halach is that on Pesach? First of all, whole year round, we still don't use anything lechatchila. We'll never use something which has any taste of something which is not kosher in it, even if the taste is not necessarily tam shvach, it's not a good taste. But on Pesach, it happens to be even more stringent, even b'di'evit, even if it was already done, we would not allow chametz to be mixed into our foods, even if it's nice in tam lufgam. So, but what happens over here is that I have my spoon, and it expels all the taste out of the spoon into the water, and now what could come back into the spoon is only tam pagum. That can't create a problem. In other words, if I have a spoon which absorbs into it sour taste of chametz, that cannot subsequently go ahead and ruin something on Pesach. So that's another approach that's used to say, you know what, you're right, the taste does go out. When the taste goes out and it comes back in again, it only comes back in as weak taste. There's another approach which is given by the Ramban, who says that the nature of water is that while it's boiling, it only pulls out, but it won't go back in. This is a little more difficult to understand, but ultimately it's important for us to understand, to hear it, because it becomes a relevant halacha with regard to Hechsher Kelim. We're generally makpid that we only use water, we don't use other liquid substances to do a hagala. Now, Lamaisa, when it comes to actually kashering, we try to get all of the above reasonings in. So what we'll do is we're going to always make sure that we're not going to kasher anything that has been used within the last 24 hours, because we want all the taste that has been absorbed into it to be tampagum. We also try to make sure that we always have water inside the pot that is 60 times larger than the thing that's being kashered. Generally speaking, that's going to be the case. And as well, there is a chumra that we only use water because of what we discussed, that when you're using water while it's boiling, it's only going to pull out the taste, but it's not going to allow the taste to go back in. This stems from, as we mentioned, the Ramban, and it comes from a Tosfos. Now, these halachas are scattered all over the place. Then Shulchan Aruch, the Ramban, Siman Tafnun and Beis Sif Hei, is where he writes that we should only use water. In terms of using the shishin that's in Tafnun Beis in Sif Aleph, that's where the halacha of 60 comes in. And in terms of using a keli, which has not been used within the past 24 hours, that can be found also in Shulchan Aruch. And ultimately, the Mishnah Brura goes through this, and he explains that Mishnah Brura Sif Katan Yud Gimel, in Siman Tafnun Beis, he writes these halachas pretty clearly. So those are the three basic things that one has to be careful about when he's doing Hekshar Kalim. Again, it's always worthwhile to consult with somebody to get clear directions and how to kasha something. Now, there's another thing which is very important with regard to Hagala, and that is that the keli has to be clean before you're going to do the Hagala. Because if it's not perfectly clean, then we're not dealing with Blias anymore, but we're not dealing with absorbed taste. We're dealing with what's called mamashes be'en, with actual food. Now, you can't take food and do agala on it. A person can't take macaroni and boil it into a pot and get the chametz out of it, because it is chametz. So if a person has actual food which is stuck to a pot or stuck to certain utensils, he can't do agala on it, because you can't get the actual food off. Now, it happens to be, it's interesting, how far do we have to go to clean off the kelim? So now in Siman Tafnun Aleph, in Shulchan Aruch Siman Tafnun Aleph, in Sif Gimel, the Shulchan Aruch writes, V'kredem Hagala, Tzarech L'shufim Yafa V'mashchezes V'reichayim, you have to clean them off very, very well, L'haver Kol Chalud D'shevahem, K'redem Hechsherim, to make sure to get all the dirt off of them before the hechsher. If you're talking about something which has a lot of crevices in it, cracks in it, you're not going to be able to do agal on it because there's going to be food stuck inside. Now, the Mishnah Brura points out something very, very important. Let's see in the Mishnah Brura in Siman Taf Nun Aleph. It's in Sif Gimel. It's in Mishnah Brura Sif Katan Chaf Beis. He writes, "V'chal zeh b'chalud d'sheish b'ketzas mamashes." That there is a problem is when we're talking about some type of rust that has some type of actual tangible existence. Shekishegayrin oisam yisham yesham kama afrurin. If you were to scratch it off, you'd have some kind of dust or residue that would be there. Shaz yesh lachosh shema yesh tachtea mashu mamashes iser be'en. In such a case, we have to worry that there's actually something there. And the rust is covering it. Aval im ein b'chaluda mamashes. Mamashes klal rak mara bilvad. K'gmosh shenitza lef'amim. Sheish shachruris oyadmimus. B'tzad apnimi shal keli. Sh'onu karen flekin ein kepeda. So this is very important. After using pots, everybody knows they get stained. And I've seen people scrubbing and scrubbing on these stains to try to get them off with all kinds of cleaning agents and steel wool and whatnot and sandpaper. That's not necessary. One does not need to scrub the pots back to their original shiny stainless steel look. If something is a permanent stain, just ignore it and it's fine. It's only when there's something which is really, which has a tangible feeling to it, there's something there on the pot, that's when we have an issue of the pot not being clean enough to do Hagala. Now, in addition to this, there's also a minhag that after we finish doing the Haggalah, we will wash the pot afterwards with cold water. Now, in most cases, that's pretty easy to do. In some cases, it can pose a big challenge. And we can't really get into the whole discussion of all different materials now, but glass, generally speaking, throughout the year, doesn't really need to have that a Haggalah. But with regard to Pesach, we are machmer on glass, especially glasses that have other materials mixed into it, such as Pyrex, which is not necessarily pure glass. So the menig is we do Haggalah on these things. The problem is that if you were to take certain glass utensils and dunk them into boiling hot water and then immediately pour cold water on them, you will almost certainly ruin it. In such a case, I've seen from Rabbi Avadia Yosef, he says one is not obligated to wash that off afterwards. And again, if someone didn't do it, then it's not ma'akev. Now, one thing to be very careful and mindful of when doing Haggalah is the water needs to be boiling hot the whole time. If a person, the nature of boiling water is that when you drop something in, especially when it's cold, the water is going to go down in its temperature, sometimes significantly. So if you were to take, if someone was, for example, doing Haggalah on silverware, if you were to drop in one piece at a time and just do that consistently, you'll notice that the water is going to go under a rolling boil for a significant amount of time, and that can be a problem because the water really needs to be boiling for there to be Haggalah. So what one should do is, if he's putting them all in at once, or he's dropping them one at a time, he should make sure that the water gets back to a rolling boil before moving on to the next step. That's basically the halachas of Haggalah. And again, Haggalah applies to something which is used through cooking. It's used with water, in other words, the process of cooking is through water. You would then go ahead and cook out the taste within it. When it comes to things that are used directly over a fire, so there you're really going to have libun. That's a lot more of a complicated process. It can also be a very dangerous process. And one has to be very careful when doing it. The most practical case of libun that we'll use is in our ovens. If you have an oven has fire on the bottom of it, and often people put bread into an oven, people bake cakes, people bake challahs. Now, in terms of exactly what the ramifications of baking inside an oven are, and how the taste gets absorbed into the walls, that's a discussion which is not for today, but say we're talking about a case where a person puts food directly on the racks of the oven, or there's food that goes directly into the oven, which touches the oven and makes the oven really chametzdik. So the halacha is he would have to have libun to be able to clean out that oven. Now there's two types of libun. One type of libun is known as libun kal, and the other type of libun is referred to as libun chamor. Libun kal is a process that's relevant in many cases throughout the year, and it's equivalent in halacha to Haggalah. In other words, something which needs to have Haggalah, which is difficult to do Haggalah on, often we can do libun kal on it. Maybe we'll discuss that a little bit later. But libun chamor is something which, you know, take a barbecue grill, a person put buns on a barbecue grill, and now he wants to use a barbecue grill on Pesach. Now, whether that's recommended or not is a different discussion. But ultimately, he would have to do libun in order to get that oven to be clean. What does libun mean? Libun literally means he turns it white. Now, the Gemara discusses different signs that would indicate that something has reached the right temperature for libun. But the sign that the Gemara seems to use is that it's so hot that sparks will fly out of it. I don't know that we have any metal nowadays that would do that. but that is the measuring stick that we're going to use and to determine if something reached that level. But nowadays, as I'm mentioning, you're not going to see that. So generally what would have to happen is it would have to get so hot that it would glow. Libun Kal would have to be hot enough that if you were to touch a paper to it, the paper would get burnt. Now, there's a very important distinction which is made in halacha with regard to the halachas of Libun. And that is whether a person is trying to burn out. Let's just have to just point out that the way Libun works is a little bit different than Hagala. Hagala, what you're doing is you are extracting the taste in the same way the taste got in. With regard to Libun, what you're doing is you're really burning out. You're burning out whatever is in there. So it's not necessarily extracting it, you're burning it. With regard to to Libun, there's a distinction made in the Gemara, really, in Avodah Zarah, Daf Ayin Vav Amud Aleph, between Hetera Bala and Isura Bala. In other words, if a person were to cook nevela in a pot, I shouldn't say that, if a person were to grill nevela on a barbecue grill, he would have to use Libun Chamor to be able to get that nevela out of the barbecue grill. But if a person were to grill meat on a barbecue grill, now he wants to use the grill for dairy. I don't know how that would work, but whatever the case is. So now, the meat that he put on the grill was kosher. He does not need to use Libun Chomer. He could use Libun Kal. There's a big question in the Paiskim. How do we view chametz? Chametz that was absorbed into something, do we say it's Isura Bala? Or do we say it's a Hetera Bala? What would be the logic behind the argument? The logic would be, well, chametz is not iser; it's only usser 7 or 8 days a year. So the rest of the year, when it went in, it's fully mutter. There's nothing usser about chametz. It happens to be it's time sensitive during certain times of the year. It can't be eaten. So perhaps we would treat that as what we'll consider hetera bala. So maybe when it comes to doing libun for Pesach, a person never has to do Libun Chamor. The other side of the argument is that no, it's always chametz. And it's not like it has changed. It always was chametz. It is chametz. It stays chametz. And that chametz becomes aser during Pesach. Now, what is the underlying thinking behind this process? Why would it be different? And the reason is as follows. It's aser for a person to eat nevela. It's aser to eat a large piece of nevela. It's aser to eat a small piece of nevela. It's aser to eat a very, very small piece of nevela. So as long as I have any semblance of nevela still sitting inside my pot or inside my utensils, I have to get it out. I can't even allow a small amount there. When I have something which is hetera, which is, let's say, milk or meat, in order for milk or meat to become a problem, it needs to mix with each other. Now, if I have something which is called a tam kolosh, a very weak taste, perhaps that can't create a new isser. Perhaps I can't create an isser, a basar b'chalav, through a very, very weak taste of basar or chalav. So maybe if I were to do a libun kal, a weak or a lower level libun, that would do enough to burn out the taste to the point where there's barely anything left. Now, if there's barely any nevela left, but a little bit of nevela left, that's still a problem. You have a little bit of treif of food left inside your pot, it's still a problem. But let's say I have just a little tiny bit of milk there, or a very weak taste of milk. That cannot create a new isser of basar b'chalav of milk and meat mixed together. So that would be the logic why the process of cleaning it out would be easier. Now the question is, how to view chametz? Now generally speaking, you know, it happens to be, the Mishnah Berurah points out in different places, we have different, it seems like from it ends up being a machlekes between the Rishonim, between the Rambam and the Ramban, but how we paskin seems to be a bit of a conflict. So the Mishnah Berurah is machmer that we generally treat chametz like isura bala. We treat it like it's an iser because it always is chametz, and chametz is always usher on Pesach. So even a little bit of chametz is usher on Pesach, and therefore we generally treat chametz like iser. But in some cases, we'll use a concept in Pesach called tziruf, Where we have other reasons to be Mako, for whatever the reason is, we'll consider it to be a Terabala. So therefore, when it comes to things which need to have Libun, we'll generally treat it like Isser, and you're going to have a real full-fledged Libun to get it out. Now, there's an age-old dispute whether or not Libun would work with the same logic that we mentioned with regard to Hagalah. Do I say that when I need to do Libun, it needs to work through every time I need Libun, I need the hottest temperature? Or perhaps I could say, I have an oven, which I know the maximum temperature of this oven is 500 degrees. So I never need to do Libun on this oven for more than 500 degrees. This is an age-old machlekes, and it's interesting, Ramesha was machmer on this, but allegedly Reb Aaron Cutler from Lakewood was mekel. And it comes out a very big nafgamina with regard to kashering ovens. If a person has self-clean, there's no problem because self-clean goes to a high enough temperature that it constitutes a libun chomer according to everybody, that's fine. Now, maybe perhaps the door would have to have special treatment, and we're not going to get into that right now. But perhaps if a person doesn't have self-clean, he could do libun kal, and that would be enough because ultimately his oven never got hotter than 400 degrees. Again, if this is relevant, one can speak to a Pesach to find out how to deal with that. Those are the two general concepts that we have to deal with regard to Hechsher Kelim, to kashering things for Pesach. We have to determine exactly its use. How was this used? Was this used to cook in it? Was this used directly over a flame? If it was used through a cooking process where there was water, was it a Kli Rishon? Did it go directly on the fire? Was it a Kli Sheni? Was it a secondary Keli? Perhaps this was something which was, you poured hot water onto it, like a cup, a coffee cup, a strainer. So those are going to be the determining factor in how the Hechsher Kelim would have to work. And something which needs to have libuns, which went directly over a fire, so that would have to actually be, would have to be singed through a fire. And that basically is the general background to the halachas. And in terms of individual appliances and kelim vessels that you have around your house, as I mentioned earlier at the beginning of this year, it's worthwhile going through the handbook or the Passover guide that is on the website. And of course, if there are any questions, anybody can feel free to reach out to me. Have a wonderful night. And be well. Have a kosher of Pesach.